Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now, welcome along. If you're watching on our social channels, you're very welcome. And if you're listening on the radio, you will hear we have Andy Dunn in studio. Hello.
Hello, Joe.
Thanks for coming in. And Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent has stayed up in Japan. Hello, Rory.
Konnichiwa, lads.
Oh, konnichiwa. Perfect pronunciation as well, I would think.
One of three Japanese phrases that I've leaned on heavily over here.
Go on, give us number two and three, please.
Oh, sorry. Sayonara and arigato gozaimasu, which is basically what you get out of every situation. That's thank you. And you kind of bow and walk away as someone really helpfully just does something for you. It's, being an English speaker in Japan is quite easy if you just point to things and say arigato gozaimasu over and over again.
You said sayonara there. I always thought it was sayonara.
Oh, well, I mean, I never claimed to be able to pronounce these words. I just used them.
How's it been going? We've heard excellent reports from everybody who's been out there. They're having a good time. They find the Japanese people genuinely wonderful and hospitable, and the atmosphere very good. I know it hasn't maybe taken over the country. It's so big and so vast, but reports have been generally very good.
It's been a really cool experience. It's, I've never been here before. It's been fascinating to just go around. They're really welcoming. I mean, like, the language barrier is difficult to actually get to talk to many Japanese people, but they're so helpful in every regard. I mean, it's quite superficial kind of exchanges that you're having with people, but they are leaving a lasting impression. And you're right, yeah. I mean, we're in Hamamatsu right now, and there's no real sense as anything's going on. We saw a few Irish fans walking around town earlier on, but it's, you know, life has just gone on as normal here. This is soccer country. They have a professional rugby team as well. But it's been really, really cool. It's been an amazing place to travel around. Been on the bullet trains this week. It's been an experience. It's been very different, and it's a World Cup that I think anyone who's been here will always remember.
I think, and before we get stuck into Irish business, we can't not mention what happened this morning. Uruguay 30, Fiji 27 was the. I mean, we said we might get a shock across the pool stages. This certainly is a candidate for the shock. Uruguay's first World Cup win since 2003. They only scored two tries throughout the whole of the 2015 World Cup. And in the World Cup in 2015, Fiji beat them 47-15. Their captain afterwards was speaking. He was saying, "I don't want this to end. I'm so proud of my country. We're not the biggest. We're not the tallest. But we came here to win." This was quite something. I made the mistake of just assuming that Fiji were going to win. I wasn't able to catch this. What the hell happened?
Well, it was on at about 5 in the morning, wasn't it? It was an early one. It was on in... I think it's Kamachi. It's the place that's been hit by the tsunami a couple of years ago, and it's still being rebuilt. So it's one of two games that's happening there. So that was special anyway. The stadium is kind of a makeshift stadium. It was full of kids from the local area who were bussed in. So it was always going to be a different kind of game from the rest of them. Most of the midweek games have been at night. This is the first one that was on during the day in Japan. It was 2:15 kickoff here. And I think most of my colleagues missed it because they were racing around to different press conferences. Thankfully, I didn't have to go to any today. So I got to watch it. I watched it in a cafe with all the Japanese players who were watching on their phone because they're on a down day today. It was amazing. Fiji had a four-day turnaround from their game against Australia, which if the refs had followed World Rugby's guidelines, they probably would have won against 14 men. They had the disappointment of losing that game. Four-day turnaround, made changes, and just weren't at the races at all. And Uruguay I've never seen a team tackle... tackle above themselves to that level. Their energy was brilliant. They played really well. They forced Fiji to mistakes. Fiji didn't offload on their own terms, and they kept picking up the offloads and running them in for tries. Fiji picked Matavesi as their kicker, and he was terrible. He missed everything, and in the end, it came down to, I think, it was 3 points in the end. But that was a pretty unfair reflection, actually, on Uruguay, because it was 10 points until the last minute try. It was amazing. The scenes at the end were phenomenal. And it was the first shot. I went to Wales, Georgia on Monday, hoping I might get a bit of that Georgia might give Wales a rattle. But it looked like we were going to go through this World Cup pool stage without much of a shock. We're kind of entering a phase with a lot of Tier 1 v Tier 2 games. It was great that even though it was Tier 2 v Tier 2, I think Fiji are like 8th or 9th in the rankings. It was a massive scalp for Uruguay to take. And it just this World Cup probably needed.
Very good. Let's turn to Ireland then. So Ireland 27, Scotland 3. Very final word on this because we've been talking about it for a few days now. They played Japan, obviously, on Saturday. Andy Dunn, I must confess, as I was watching Ireland looking very impressive at the weekend, I did think to myself several times, what does Andy Dunn think right now? Because Andy Dunn has had some misgivings about Ireland's approach. And this looks to me, to my untrained eye, pretty similar to what we've been doing for the last however long. And I was thinking, what does Andy Dunn make of this? Is Andy Dunn looking at this saying, uh-oh, same old story here, we're going to come a cropper, or were you very impressed and buoyed up by what you saw?
The latter, very impressed and buoyed up. Very objectively, if you look at it, I would often have harped on about too many rooks in our game. Like, we averaged 140 in the last year. We had 95. So we had 45 less rooks. We had 17 defenders beaten, way more than we had in the last year in any game. We had 10 clean line breaks. We had 3 offloads. So if even objectively, if you look at it, it might appear, okay, it's similar-ish in style. It wasn't really. If you look at the phases of play where we were a threat, if you look at a really nice little way to look at it is who owned possession more. For example, in the second half, we'd only 43%. And that delights me and it buoyed me because the way the game is currently played out, it's so physical. I felt like in the depths of our lull there in 2018, we were hammering ourselves into submission never with a lack of endeavour or a lack of will to win, but just it ran its course as a strategy. And so front five, I think if you take all those little things into account and then you look at the individual performances of the front five, probably notably was Rory Best, who can get a hard time with 12 lineouts out of 12, played a full 80 minutes and scored a try. The other two were world, the other four were world class. And then you've got your 9 and 10 on the back of a pretty abysmal year for Ireland in terms of their performances, probably going in with something to prove, which is no harm when they're again world class players. So between our front five and our 9 and 10, and again I'd say I still think both 9 and 10 could again improve on that performance, I was very heartened by the quality of the play, particularly 4 weeks after the horror show that happened in Twickenham and us all feeling down in the dumps. But objectively, just looking at it calmly away from the emotion of seeing a good performance again, it is hitting those markers that we want to see for a bit more like sustainable play and a bit less labour intensive play. And yeah, I was delighted.
You mentioned the 45 fewer rooks than average.
Yeah.
Was that by dint of having less possession than we might ordinarily have, or were the team doing something different with the ball?
Well, I think that we were trying to, we weren't automatically looking to go to ground and set up another rook in order to hold possession. And if you look at, you know, where do you see that most? Probably in the fact we stayed on our feet and we beat 17 defenders. And of those 17 one-on-one wins, we created 10 line breaks, which means the ball is off the floor more, which means you've less rooks. And then you look into the second half, like we did things like we kicked the ball a lot more, but we kicked it in their territory and we gave them possession. So we were up in their territory and we were surrendering possession. And again, I think that's way more pragmatic and smart in the World Cup than what we'd done in 2018. So yeah, it was really good stuff.
Really. I'm relieved. Now I'm really excited.
Yeah.
Andy Dunn seal of approval. Now we're moving, Rory. Now we're on. You were there. Talk to us. What stood out for you?
I think I was really impressed, and I've now gotten back to the level where I think Ireland can contend, and you know, all that worry that we had after those two defeats in the Six Nations and that game in Twickenham, not quite all gone out the window, but you know, there was a sense that they are back to that level of 2018 in terms of their physicality. And while I agree with the one thing, as the week goes on, the more I'm questioning Scotland. And like, one of the reasons Ireland didn't go through 20 phases in the 22 was because Scotland let them score within 3. You know, they were kind of settling into their bash, 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 and they got over the line before they normally do. And the Scots are getting absolutely roasted back home for their performance. Rob Kearney said yesterday that they'll be disappointed with them, and actually now that they think about it, you know, Japan is going to be the harder game. Maybe that's something they have to kind of convince themselves of anyway, but there is a little bit of concern that Scotland just weren't at the races. Now, that was partly because Ireland were really, really excellent, and got to a level that Scotland couldn't live with. Dealt with the conditions well. It was a difficult day to play rugby. It was particularly second half, the rain came down. The kicking game was excellent. But I think with all those kind of caveats about Scotland, I think there's massive, the exciting thing is there's massive room for improvement as well. I don't think Sexton had a particularly great game. Just watching it back a little bit earlier, he had a kind of a strange one. He got blocked down with one of his first possessions. Looked to be carrying something. I don't think he's going to play in this weekend. But if they can get him back playing well, I think that's obviously a massive strength of their bow. They can be even more clinical in their execution in the 22. There was a couple of times after they scored the three tries from the first three visits, they started, they kind of didn't execute as well. They're obviously not going to score every time they're there, but the stuff that they did, the mistakes they made were really, really fixable. So it was a really good performance. The pack gives them such a platform to build on. Murray seems to be, really humming now. They're bringing Earls and Kearney back in, we think. They've both got a fire lid under them because the two lads played so well. So it's a massive base to work from, and it's given them the comfort that they can manage these next three games whatever way they want. They don't have to risk players. They have that comfort now. They're effectively in the quarterfinal. They know who they're playing pretty much. And while the build-up is going to be long and a little bit tedious, I think by the time we get to the end of the 29 days between the first game against Scotland and that quarterfinal against South Africa, it's given Joe Schmidt a lot of time to get stuck into it. So yeah, I think there's reason to be excited about this Ireland team at the World Cup, with the caveat that I'm not sure how good Scotland's performance was.
Yeah, that is the worry. So 20th of October, it is going to be a hell of a run-in. Long build-up for the media especially, as well as the players. What did you take from South Africa's performance?
I think they got quite unlucky in the first 20 minutes. Was a physical onslaught, and who was the name of the ref again? Sorry, was it Garces? No, I can't remember. Garces, yeah. There was about 20 minutes on the clock, and they'd forced New Zealand to creak very, very significantly, and they got a penalty advantage. And by playing advantage, the South Africans tackled one of the All Blacks in the dead ball area. Over, I think it was Mwanga, carried it over his own try line. And the ref didn't play advantage. He gave him a penalty. By Andre Pollard took the kick, which hit the post. Now, none of the South Africans complained at the time, which, again, is you, if you're a coach and you're looking at that on field, your captain, your key players have got to know when your foot is on the throat of the Kiwis and you've dominated their scrum, and the advantage is take a 5 metre scrum and maybe get a pushover, you're against an All Blacks pack then who, for example, they haven't picked Owen Franks, and they've a scrum that's conceded a 5 metre pushover trying their 10-0 down. That, I think, that was probably a huge turning point in the game. When the Aussies put 47 points on the All Blacks about 5 weeks ago, and South Africa were looking extremely sharp, I think I was asked in here, who would you, who would you like in the quarters? And I said New Zealand. But I think I'm changing that for now, because what I did see as in the resultant 60 minutes, South Africa didn't turn the screw when they had that opportunity, was watching an All Black side who can find a way to beat you no matter what, where South Africa don't look like a side who will find a way to beat you no matter what. They look like a team capable of physically bullying almost any team on the planet. But if we have the arousal levels at the right pitch and just get up there physically to match them, we can find a way to subdue them eventually. I don't think we can do it. The All Blacks just find a way to beat you. South Africa look very, very fearsome, but I would wonder about their smartness on the field, having seen that against New Zealand when they really had a chance to turn the screw. Question their leadership on the field, how someone didn't acknowledge what was going on and even come after the ref and say, please, let's take the 5 metre scrum.
Yeah. Where are you in all that, Rory? And I suppose it might come down to Ireland's ability to withstand that 25-minute blitzkrieg that South Africa will bring.
I think it'll be easier to survive it if you know that what's coming on the other side is not as fearsome. I mean, South Africa showed so much of their hand in that first 20-25 minutes, and then they were gassed. And I wonder if even like they were just too tired to make that decision, or even they said, let's give ourselves a breather, because they, as soon as the All Blacks got their first try, suddenly the South African bodies just sunk. That you could see, you know, hands on legs, hands on hips. They were gone. Now they got a second win after half time, but the damage was already done. It was just, they just didn't manage the scoreboard. They didn't get the reward. Andy's completely right. They absolutely dominated that game in every way. They had the All Blacks looking terrified. The All Blacks for that 20 minutes looked really, really poor, and made them look really, really human, and gave a template almost as how to go about beating them. And then just because they didn't get the scoreboard pressure, they couldn't manage it themselves. And then the All Blacks did what the All Blacks do. But I wouldn't particularly fear either of them in a quarter final, based on what we know Ireland have. I think Ireland have the weapons to beat both of them. It's going to take probably our best World Cup performance of all time, but that's what's going to take anyway. You know that that we are talking about a historic achievement. I do think that Ireland are better set up to deal with New Zealand than they are for South Africa. I think South Africa's physicality, they just have the kind of players that Ireland have struggled with this year. But then again, New Zealand have the weapons out wide to do so much damage, and Ardie Savea looks an unbelievable nick. So, it's going to, like, you flip flop on that one all the time. Yeah. Who's the better one to have? But it's going to be South Africa at this stage.
So it's Japan on Saturday, 8:15 a.m. Irish time, Shizuoka Stadium. Reading your dispatches. So again, I'm sure you're bothering Joe Schmidt with having all this team news and all these injury updates. Rob Kearney, we're hearing back in. I know you guys spoke to him in the last 24 hours. He had a niggle in his calf the first 5 minutes of the first training session. Could have played, so he's certainly going to play. Joey Carberry, you suspect he needs game time. He seems to be fully fit, up and running. Johnny Sexton's a doubt. Could Johnny Sexton play if this was a quarter final? Like, where is Sexton? I think it was in your piece, you mentioned potentially a groin strain. It's been talked about as a bang to the quad. Is this kind of thing and the seriousness of the Sexton injury sort of shrouded in a touch of mystery? Do we know, could he play if it was a massive game?
We don't know. I think they're managing him. They obviously couldn't kick on Saturday, or on Sunday, which was the telltale that something wasn't right. They say it was tactical to bring him off. He did receive treatment twice on his groin. And you will know more about the intricacies of why you would treat a quad injury by massaging the groin area. But I think he probably would play this week if it was a World Cup quarterfinal. They know that they can even lose to Japan and still go into their quarterfinal. But why risk him? I think he'll possibly play against Russia, and then he'll definitely take him out of the firing line against Samoa, because those boys are going out and taking heads. The Samoa Russia game, the couple of the tackles they threw in were just outrageous. And if they see the World Player of the Year on the pitch, they're going to go after him. So I can't see him playing there. So there's a bit of mystery around it. They're not really giving us much clarity on injuries at all since we got here. Most of the stuff is coming out through kind of back channels. Earls and Kearney both did media. Now, Earls was put up before the Scotland game, but that was a definite ruse. Everyone in the room knew that Keith Earls wasn't playing, including Keith Earls, who limped out of the room. But they were both put up for an interview yesterday, and I fully expect them both of them to play. Carberry, Richie Murphy dropped a bit of a hint that while he will be involved, Jack Carty also played very well at the weekend and might not automatically be leapfrogged. So that's going to be interesting to see where they go with that one. I mean, Carberry's played so little rugby over the course of the last year, and Japan played an unbelievable tempo. Maybe they don't feel that 60 minutes is in them yet. So that's a bit of a wait and see. Carty, fairness to him, came on and did really, really well. That little kick that he put over that led Farrell to Chris Farrell's break, I think it was, that was class. And, you know, he seems to be really growing into it. There's no definitive lines on the team like just yet, but the word, It's been pretty easy because of the way the injury situation has gone. Like, Robbie Henshaw won't be involved. Sexton pretty clearly won't be involved either. And if you look at the way he picked it last week, it's the lads who trained on Tuesday who get picked at the weekend. I think that'll be similar again this weekend. So I'd be worried. I don't think they should risk Bundiaki and Peter Omani, even if they've cleared all of their protocols. You know, I think they should be taken out of the firing line this week. But that's one for Joe Schmidt. They've got the medical information to go on.
Yeah, I did want to touch on that. And I'm always acutely conscious that we don't have the medical information. Like, I haven't seen their HIA-1 result, their HIA-2 result, or the HIA-3 result. I don't know what their symptoms are. I don't know anything about it. And yet it just feels remiss of us not just to touch on it. So there's a 6-day turnaround. They are totally within their rights to return them to training and to play them at the weekend. Is it just that there's a general sense of, well, why risk anything? Is that the kind of tone of the coverage?
Yeah, well, that's it's the it seems like to me like an awfully short time if the players were taken out of the firing line because they had head injuries last weekend, and the players who stepped in for them did really, really well. There's a squad there. Why not use it? There was always going to be four or five changes this week. If Reece Ruddock came in or Jack Conan came in for Peter O'Mahony, does the team really suffer? I don't particularly think so. Chris Farrell was really good. They're light on centres anyway. Why risk Bundiaki getting something further? I mean, O'Mahony was treated twice. O'Mahony was treated twice at the weekend. So they, you know, like they have the information. They'll make the decision based on that information. But just seems like if they haven't been able to train fully this week, if they are being monitored, why not give them the extra couple of days and put them in against Russia next week?
Have you seen much Japan in recent times, Andy?
No, not a whole lot. I chatted to Greg McWilliams, who's Irish skills coach of the USA, who played them about 3-4 weeks before the World Cup. And his view of their style of play at the time, when it looked like Ireland were struggling badly leading into the World Cup, he, as an Irishman, I suppose, with an American flag draped over him, he said, "I'd be worried about the Japanese game if we struggle against Scotland, because their style of play, they've designed it with the World Cup in mind for the last 18 months, 24 months, to hold possession for longer than your typical international team would, or to keep the ball alive for a long period. So the average ball alive or ball in play in a rugby international is about 43 minutes in total. And they were trying to train and create a scenario where the ball is in play for 50 to 52 minutes, something like that, in the humidity that they're more accustomed to than everyone else. The theory being, you know, the last 20 minutes they run from everywhere, they're very attack minded, but they keep the ball in play a lot, that they tire out some of the bigger, more established sides. On the back of us, a very convincing Scottish performance, I would have thought Japan will hold off, accept an honourable defeat and target Scotland in the last group game and be prepared to die on their swords and any other Japanese cliches I can fit in. But if they want to go after a side in order to get into a quarter final, I don't see them, if they're being pragmatic, saying, right, we're going to exhaust ourselves in the Irish game. I think Scotland are a side I really would like to like, but progressively starting to hate them because they talk too much.
Sure do.
They seem spineless. They're at once brilliant for 5 to 10 minute periods, or that 1 30-minute period in Twickenham, but they talk way too much for a team that's achieved nothing. And I would say I'd kind of love to see Japan go after them now, and I'd love to see Japan do a job on them in the last game. But in terms of Ireland being overly concerned about them this Saturday, everything we'll hear is naturally respectful of their standards and their capability. But I think with numerous changes, we should be well able to take them on Saturday. Well able. And I think there's probably a confidence within the squad on the back of that performance against Scotland that anyone can come in. Lovely to see players coming in with lots of time on the clock, and again probably a little atypical of what Joe would have normally done. He brought on Jack Carty with about, I don't know, way too late in that Wales game in the Six Nations, and he made a difference. And obviously Johnny wasn't, I think Johnny was finding his form again, but he was prepared to bring Jack in much earlier, and he was prepared to bring younger, less established players into a World Cup crucial game.
Yeah.
So I think the overall group confidence will be very present going into the Japanese game. I actually think it's interesting what Rory mentioned, sorry to
go on,
shoot ahead, but I'd be surprised if he starts Carberry. Actually, I think he's going to start Carty. I think he deservedly should start. I think he's been excellent in all that's been asked of him, and I think it will give Joey a chance to find his legs in the last 20-25 again and within less pressure setting.
Okay, so
manage Joey's re-entry.
If you were in Carberry's situation with your out half hat on, you might prefer to come on in that scenario. Expand a bit on where we are there. So you've Sexton not kicking.
Yeah.
Schmidt did say very clearly afterwards, there's been a big game. He could have kept kicking. Yeah. But given where the game was, we said, let's not risk it. Now, he's still kicking the ball in open play. So you wonder, do two or three extra kicks really make that much difference? So I don't know if that tallied for you. So told us about Sexton and what you're seeing. And then also Carberry versus in-form Jack Carty. When does that get tricky for Carberry to force his way back in if he needs to?
So I think to answer the second question, it just got tricky for him. Right now for Joey on the back, I don't think it was a case had, you know, had he not picked up the knock against the Italians, he'd a bit of a clear run to the World Cup and I'm sure would have started a few of the group games, but that's sport, unforgiving, ruthless. Jack Carty again has been very calm and opportunistic, and he's creative. He's not a member of the accounts department. He doesn't tick every single box ideally, but he is creative and he's courageous enough to do that. So when you're brave, you know, the fortune favours the brave. He's taken a couple of risks that are not typical of a Joe Schmidt style of play, and he's got rewarded for it, such as the chip through, and I think he deserves to start probably. So that I don't think it fundamentally changes. I wonder actually, does it change fundamentally, like, who goes on the bench for a World Cup quarter final in the management's eyes? I'm not sure. If Joey was to come on and have an excellent 20 minutes, I'd say he might just nip in ahead again. His place kicking record was superb towards the tail end of last year as well.
Johnny not kicking,
I think he's just protecting himself. Older statesman. It was nice to see him smile coming off the field. I read an interview with Albie Matthews with Dermot, or David. He's an Irish surname. I was in here with him on Saturday. This is embarrassing, I can't remember his name. But
journalist.
Yes. He did an article with Albie Matthewson for the Times.
Go on, Rory.
Kieran Raleigh.
Kieran Raleigh.
Yeah, Kieran, yeah.
Was way off. And I only just met him anyway, in my defence.
Albie didn't hold back, did he?
He certainly didn't, but
people didn't catch it, he was just saying...
He said Johnny Sexton's body language can be awful.
Yeah.
And there's more than a grain of truth in that. You know, really, really big players, do you take it away from them, that aggression or that, you know... But he was saying teams will go after that, but... It's hard to know. He's been very successful today,
sure
being a crank. So you don't want to take it out of him.
Yeah.
But it was nice to see him relaxed and smiling, you know, coming off the field and after the game and even on the bench. He did look relaxed. So I think that's probably a really good sign. I think he's just totally managing himself there. It probably would have hurt a bit to kick, but, you know, I don't think he couldn't.
Yeah.
Like you said, he was kicking out of hand. But, he, Murray... looked way sharper, you know, sniping a little bit more, a lot more sense of purpose about his play.
Yeah.
And Johnny, while he didn't shoot the lights out, they just looked a bit more back in the groove.
Mm.
And, you know, not a bad place to be after game one.
Yeah, it's certainly been a good opening weekend. Rory, before we go, it's worth mentioning, I think people will have seen this at this stage, but World Rugby even issued a statement to hold their hands up and say, yes, the refereeing has been quite terrible. It's a reasonably positive thing for them to do, actually. They could have put their head in the sand, but they fronted up a little bit and said, yeah, this actually has been pretty woeful and it's not what we want to continue, and sightings have been dished out. So that was almost unprecedented, was it? It's pretty close to unprecedented.
I can't remember it happening before. They released that statement yesterday, and then within a couple of hours the Samoans went out with their tackling and were not given red cards. So there was two incidents in the first half where Vasily Artemiev nearly had his head taken off. And it was Roman Poit went through with his TMO, kind of the steps of, you know, and both times he said there's a mitigation in the fact that the player dipped into contact. And pretty much everyone I've talked to since, including Tony Brown, the Japan coach today at the press conference, said, how are they not red cards? Both players have been cited. Russia should have been playing a World Cup game against 13 men. I spoke to Mark McDermott, the Irish assistant coach of Russia. Their main target here is to get their first ever World Cup win against 13-man Samoa team, even with a four-day turnaround that they had. That was their chance at history. Last Saturday, Fiji should have been playing against 14-man Australia, because Reece Hodgman should have been sent off. But once again, the referee made a bad call. And Wales benefit. And I'm not sure who Russia play next. I'm not sure who Samoa play next. But whoever they play next will benefit as well. It's probably Scotland, because the two players will be banned. But the actual team they're playing against, who are, you know, Purcelli Yatto was taken off for Fiji because he was concussed by the hit by Reece Hodge, which went completely unpunished. So they lost their best player. They didn't get a penalty try. And they weren't playing against 14 men, which they should have been. And 4 days later, they have to play against Uruguay and they lose. And now the World Cup's absolutely terrible, when they should have won. So, like, for all the world would be put those statements out, the refs have to back it up. Mm. They can't hide behind the siding commissioners, because ultimately there is going to be another incident where a team should get the reward of having an opposition player sent off, doesn't, and they lose the game partly as a result. There should be on-field consequences and as well as post-game consequences. And the refereeing has been, you know, mixed, but I mean, all we heard about beforehand was about these high hits, and they haven't implemented it at all. And this is the time when a lot more people watch rugby than normally do. And if they see those things going unpunished, they're not going to want their kids playing the game. And that's ultimately what World Rugby should be concerned about. And so, I mean, they can make all the statements, but until the decisions are actually made on field, I don't think anyone's going to really buy it.
Yeah, very hard to argue with that. Any final thoughts then? We've got to wrap this up. Andy, anything else grabbing your eye that you want to mention?
Rory's hotel room looks remarkably clean. I was wondering, does he tidy
it
up pre-interview? Yeah. Don't see any empty pizza boxes.
Show us the floor.
No way. No way. No, I've carefully, strategically spent about an hour trying to find one spot that I could present to the world. No, it's not in great nick at all. It's not. Living out of a suitcase is no fun.
Well, we appreciate you staying up, and we'll be reading about it, I'm sure, in the Irish Independent tomorrow. Thanks a million. Appreciate it.
Cheers, lads.
That's Rory O'Connor. All our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. Andy Dunn, excellent as ever. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks for popping in. We're going to take a very short break. We're going to be back with James Lowe.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of Us, everyone in.